Ladies and gentlemen, hello. We're happy to welcome you. Let us continue our series of press conferences running up for our AGM here at Gazprom. Today's press conference is to discuss matters of the company's strategic development. The press conference is hosted by Oleg Aksyutin, Deputy Chairman of the Management Committee, Head of Department, Andrey Fig, Head of Department, and Kirill Polos, Deputy Head of Department, Head of Directorate. Now, without further ado, over to Oleg Aksyutin, and after the presentation, we will start our Q&A session. Mr. Aksyutin, over to you.
Thank you very much. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. To begin with, let me make a brief introductory presentation, take you through long-term strategic priorities of Gazprom, tell you about our key investment projects that we're currently running in Russia. It stands to note that the past year, 2020, has been a challenge for the global energy sector and for the broader global economy. However, long-term targets of the industry's development are the same. This is those targets and priorities Gazprom bases its strategy on. At the center of the strategy is sustainable growth in demand for natural gas in the long run. Talking about independent estimates of the dynamics of the global energy mix and demand for commodities, we can say the following. In the coming two decades, the leaders will be natural gas and renewables. These will be commodity or energy carrier leaders. We often hear a question if natural gas will be demanded for. Let's take a closer look here. A key growth point these days is renewables, renewable energy. However, at the same time, there is such a notion as absolute contribution into meeting incremental demand for energy carriers. And here, natural gas is set to be the indisputable leader. By 2040, according to estimates, natural gas will meet nearly 40% of incremental demand for energy versus just 34% delivered by renewables. Demand for natural gas is set to grow in Gazprom's key markets, in particular in the Russian local market. The current Russian energy strategy sets guidance numbers or targets for consumption of natural gas. By 2035, this level may achieve some 520 BCM per annum. Today, Gazprom Group expects high natural gas sales in Russia as we develop our gasification program, deliver more gas distribution infrastructure. Also, it stands to mention environmental aspects of our operations. The Russian gasification program presupposes the transition of coal-fired energy generation capacities to natural gas. Transition from coal to natural gas is some 50% more efficient than transition from natural gas to renewables in terms of carbon intensity. We do a lot to reduce emissions. We literally improve the health situation in Russian cities. We strive to reduce carbon intensity of the Russian economy and contribute greatly to low carbon development of foreign markets. For this purpose, we increase natural gas supplies down modern up-to-date pipelines to Europe and China. The launch of the Power of Siberia pipeline in late 2019 made Gazprom the first company ever who delivers pipeline gas both to Europe and to Asia. A couple of words about the largest import-oriented markets in Russia, in the world, sorry. This is Europe and China. The Chinese market may catch up and take over the European market by 2025. By 2030, the total natural gas demand in these two target markets, Europe and China, may approach 1 trillion cubic meters per year. I get to say that indigenous production of natural gas in Europe is decreasing. In China, this is growing, but at a slower pace than one may expect. Demand in China is anyway growing at a faster pace than indigenous production. So this is the backdrop against which we expect growth in import capacity of these markets from 471 to 550 BCM per year. Our strong foothold will be supported by strong competitive edge of Gazprom, an established portfolio of long-term contracts, and ever-improving throughput of our modern gas pipelines on the back of our key investment projects in the long run. Increasing deliveries to Russian and international markets, we focus on environment. Let's start with reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Gazprom does a lot to reduce its footprint, and this does bring fruit. Greenhouse gas emissions in 2020 alone reduced 14%. Pipeline gas exports by Gazprom to Europe leaves a minimum footprint. See the slide on the screen. Here you can see that Russian pipeline gas imports are the greenest and meet all the European environmental targets. We're not going to stay where we are. We're going to keep contributing in low carbon development, in particular through hydrogen. Today, hydrogen is mainly produced from natural gas. Now, with the help of CO2 capturing technology, this is cheaper than producing hydrogen with the use of renewables. And in the future, we're going to produce hydrogen from natural gas without CO2 emissions. We keep developing our upstream resource base on the back of conventional gas fields that are economically more feasible and greener than non-conventional fields. We develop the Yamal Peninsula production hub, which is going to deliver a lion's share of incremental volumes in the zone of the unified gas transportation system. We develop the Cinnamon and Apshin deposits of Bavanenkovo with nameplate capacity 115 BCM per annum. Bavanenkovo-Ukhta and Bavanenkovo-Ukhta-2 gas pipelines are used as takeaway infrastructure. Gazprom, in 2019, Gazprom started developing a new unique gas field. This is the Karasavay field. It is going to ramp up to some 32 BCM per annum, which is its nameplate capacity. Now over to Eastern Siberia and the Russian Far East. The Chayanda field of 25 BCM is already producing natural gas since 2019. This is the basis for the power of Siberia. The Irkutsk hub is centered around Kvikta field, 27 BCM per annum. Today we are developing and working to ramp up the Kvikta-Chayanda section to feed natural gas into the power of Siberia to help it fully ramp up. We focus on the Sakhalin natural gas production cluster, including the development of the Kirinsk natural gas field, Kirinsk and South Kirinsk field. As we increase production on these two fields, the Sakhalin-Khabarovsk-Vladivostok pipeline throughput is going to be further expanded, and currently we are constructing the pipeline section from Komsomolsk-on-Amur to Khabarovsk. We continue expanding the northern transportation corridor, in particular in the section of Ukhta-Torzhok 2 and in the section from Grazovets to Slavyanskaya compressor station. Talking about growth in demand for natural gas in our key markets and our investment projects, I shall say that this will help boost our operational metrics by the end of the current decade. Gazprom's strategic priorities are sustainable growth in natural gas production, increase in natural gas sales domestically and internationally, improving reliability and efficiency of natural gas supply through high-tech pipelines, Our key markets, being Russia, Europe, and China, will play a pivotal role. And it goes hand in hand with the pivotal role of natural gas in the energy transition. And this all will help Gazprom to further strengthen its leadership in the global energy space. In brief, this is basically it. Now we will be happy to take a question, ladies and gentlemen. The floor is yours. Ladies and gentlemen, let's start our Q&A session. The first question comes from Svetlana Kolkina, AKM. Hello, colleagues. My question is about local communities. How do local communities participate in discussing your investment projects where they live? Andrei Fick has taken the question. Yeah, thanks for your question, Svetlana. Well, as we do design and engineering studies, as we collaborate with local authorities, certainly local communities are engaged in discussions at the stage of public hearing. Direct contacts only happen when we run environmental hearing procedures. And when we collaborate with local authorities, administrations, indirect contacts are arranged for throughout the cycle on an end-to-end basis. And this becomes close and more direct when we enter the site for installation and construction work. This is where we start using actively local resources and capabilities to do some specific services and works available in the local labor market and contractor market. Also, we deploy the services sphere, consuming some additional services that are certainly demanded for in such cases. Thank you very much. Next question comes from the Vedomosti, Matvey Katkov. Yep. Hello, colleagues. Mr. Iksutin, the question is for you. You're well known as someone who is against renewable energy sources and as a supporter of an advocate of hydrogen. Could you please take us through competitive advantages of hydrogen? And my second question is also about hydrogen. How do you see ways to tackle technological challenges related to pipeline transportation of hydrogen, like increased wear and tear of pipelines and so on? Oleg Aksutin. Well, I'm an advocate of safe and environmental models of global energy. I'm not an advocate of hydrogen or whatever. Now, renewable energy sources are used at Gazprom's production facilities. I'm not sure if you remember it or not, but over the recent 25 years at Yamburg, we use renewables. We have been using renewables as the core energy source of the deposit facilities, of the field facilities. We use renewable energy to deliver electricity to our crane clusters in remote areas. We also use renewable energy to operate gas distribution stations. So this is not for or against. The question is, does this make sense economically? Does this make sense technologically? And is this reliable enough? So these are the key criteria. So we're not saying that we're against something or we are specifically for a technology. We are for feasible solutions and technologies. Now, hydrogen. Indeed, we have been doing hydrogen for quite a while already. Hydrogen-related matters are quite intelligence-intensive, science-intensive, so to speak, including hydrogen transportation, which has a few ways and forms, like using different aggregate sites, for example, the liquefied form of hydrogen to transport it through pipelines. So again, this requires top-notch scientific justifications and a lot of R&D efforts. Today, we work to study the impact of hydrogen on metal, like we used to transport methane through our pipelines. What will happen if we start transporting hydrogen? then this is a matter of the regulatory base. There is no regulatory base for hydrogen, and there is no global market for hydrogen. So these matters require sound consideration, clear analysis of all advantages and disadvantages, and finding efficient solutions. Now, back in 2013, Gazprom started doing hydrogen seriously, so to speak, and our first task was to consider hydrogen as a fuel for our gas pumping stations and units. We didn't consider hydrogen in its pure form. We did consider hydrogen and methane mix. Why? To reduce toxic emissions, it's obvious. And also then, we started thinking about using this methane and hydrogen mix to reduce our carbon footprint. And this is quite compliant with the paradigm we have today, these days. This is the current focus. So now, to produce hydrogen, we shall look for ways that make it possible to produce hydrogen primarily without emissions of CO2. And whatever solutions we deploy, they must be scientifically justified, and this is what we're currently busy with. Oskar, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question comes from RBC. Ludmila Podobedova.
Ludmila, your mic is on. Hello. Mr. Iksutin, could you please tell me, I mean, what are the priority routes and ways of transporting hydrogen? What are you currently considering? I mean, domestically and internationally. Is there any guidance as to the amount of hydrogen you will be able to export, and by which point in time? This is my first question, and my second question right away. How could one optimize the cost of low-carbon hydrogen produced from natural gas with CO2 capturing or with CO2 disposal system, and what's the current cost?
Let me start with the second question. Today, hydrogen is a more expensive product than methane, for example. But this is again a matter of environmental charges, so to speak, payment for the environment. If we compare the cost of hydrogen against something, but again, making a comparison, we must understand quite a few details. Are there subsidies, or are there no subsidies and other related things? So, in a pure technological, sense, steam reforming to produce hydrogen when CO2 is disposed of, is buried, this appears to be the cheapest way to produce hydrogen. Then comes pyrolysis, which is a bit more expensive, and the most expensive is the so-called green hydrogen, which means hydrogen produced from renewables. Now, talking numbers, or talking prices, if you wish, this is only possible today if we benchmark, if we can analyze what is currently sold at hydrogen fuel stations. Price varies between $4 to $7, depending on the continent and the country. However, one must remember that every individual project on CO2 disposal does have an impact on the ultimate price and cost. Now, what is the possible hydrogen consumption amount? A more or less clear thing may be said about mining companies. They're trying to migrate from coal to hydrogen, so there may be some demand for hydrogen, but this is basically it. No global hydrogen market has been established today, so it's really premature to talk about any specific concrete volumes of hydrogen to be demanded for consumed. I wouldn't talk about it as early as today. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. But could you please answer my first question? How much are you going to invest in capacities to transport hydrogen or liquid hydrogen? Currently, our CAPEX plan has no amounts earmarked for hydrogen. Hydrogen is only at the R&D stage. We have a variety of missions where we cooperate, for example, with the Tomsk University, with Samara University. These are two technologies of producing hydrogen without CO2 emissions. This is basically two types of pyrolysis. Also, we work together with ODC to deliver a commercial unit to produce hydrogen from methane at production assets. And also, we are piloting this project in Samara and in Ufa. So, talking about investments, there are no investment decisions on hydrogen at Gazprom yet. This is only R&D stage. Thank you. Next question comes from Tatiana Kiselyova, Russia Today. Hello. Gentlemen, my question is about a recent statement made by Mr. Miller. He said that Gazprom was working to develop the company's low-carbon development scenarios through 2050. Could you please tell us in more detail what kind of a document that is, when you are going to disclose it publicly, and how dramatic, how ambitious your climate targets are going to be? Today, many claim that they strive for carbon neutrality. Maybe this will be the case with Gazprom as well. Thank you for your question. Indeed, Gazprom does work on it. Sustainable development scenarios of Gazprom through 2050 are being developed on the basis of the analysis of political, economic, and technological trends of the development of the global energy sector, given the ever-increasing importance of climate change. We expect that the scenarios will be ready in May 2022. And within each of the scenarios under consideration, specific climate-related targets for Gazprom will be set. The scenarios will factor in the low-carbon strategy of the Russian Federation that is currently under development. In particular, a carbon-neutral scenario will also be analyzed and considered, among others. Thank you. Thank you. Next question. Gas industry, Amin Akarov. Please go ahead. Hello. At the working committee of the Global Business Congress and at your Capital Markets Day, you mentioned a pivotal role of natural gas in the global energy mix for coming decades. For that bridge, as you called it, to stretch as far ahead as possible, what kind of innovative developments will Gazprom need? Thank you for your question. This would be a topic for a dedicated press conference. You know, this is a big thing. But I will try to cut a long story short here. Now, today, talking about our pipelines, we mentioned modern, up-to-date, innovative pipelines. One of our areas of focus is reducing carbon footprint while transporting natural gas. Hydrogen, methane-hydrogen mix is at the foundation of this bridge. Also, we work a lot technologically with representatives of the pipeline industry, and work is currently active to deliver pipes to sustain pressure of 160 atmospheres to And these technologies are said not to have a particular impact on metal intensity of the construction. So higher pressure of gas transportation will help increase intercompressor station distances, run distances will be longer, and so this will translate into more efficient economics of construction, and this will make our projects greener naturally. And then it will touch upon infrastructural matters like shut-off valves and other devices that will have to operate at this high level of pressure. All this will be required to ensure seamless, reliable, and efficient operation of gas transportation to off-takers, to consumers. Now, what's also in scope is stronger gas pumping units, units of higher capacity power generation units, 32 megawatts. Now, for example, we have it under our belt. So this is basically it. I would stop here talking about the bridge, talking about natural gas transportation. We could discuss production, we could discuss offshore production, we could discuss offshore fields and other related things, but what I have mentioned would be basically it. I hope that does answer your question in this format. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Next question comes from Alexei Novikov, Interfax. Hello, gentlemen. Hello, Mr. Rexutin. I have three questions. The first one is the following. That's about procurement at Gazprom. Now, given your active procurement efforts, one could assume that there are some processes related to maybe there may be some processes related to some caps or limits on spending being removed, especially on the backdrop of quite optimistic pricing for natural gas in Europe. Now, have you made any decisions to update your CAPEX limits within Gazprom Group for 2021? Next question about in 2020, it was formed into a dedicated holding company, and after this challenging year, has the consolidation of Gazprom proven efficient and effective? Was it the right decision to consolidate Gazprom, or maybe it would be better to continue using it as a contractor? And my third question, when are you going to bring the South Kirinskaya field in stream? Thank you. Yeah, Andrei Thick taking the question. Thanks, Alexei. Let me take your questions one by one. First, our CAPEX plan. The thing is that investment planning cycle is not as vibrant as the market situation, so it's too early to talk about any revision of investment metrics. Our regulations do provide for possible changes and updates to the CAPEX plan, but only on a half-year basis. So it's too early to answer your question. I think we would be able to answer your question about CAPEX plan 2021 towards October this year. Secondly, we work within the parameters of CAPEX plan approved last December. The total amount is slightly in excess of 902 billion rubles, as approved by the Board of Directors. Certainly, our CAPEX plan covers Gazprom's needs to take care of its peak balance projects, its key projects, projects to secure the achievement of its strategic goals and targets. Gazprom, just like any company, may require additional funding as it implements its CAPEX plan, but the analysis of such needs and requirements will be analyzed towards late summer, as I have already said. If that answers your first question, let me comment on the second one. consolidation of our construction assets that were used in this or that form to take care of Gazprom's investment projects. I'm afraid it's too little time that has passed after we did it, so it's too early to draw an ultimate bottom line. And also, it's obvious that 2020 was quite a challenging year in terms of its impact on investment processes, just like on any other sphere of our operation and other companies' operations, both domestically and internationally. At the same time, it stands to note that the legal process of asset consolidation is over. Talking about business processes, this is still pending completion. This is underway. However, the core tasks that were set to ourselves when we made our consolidation decisions for Gazprom have been tackled to date, in my opinion. We have delivered against those tasks. Certainly, this makes us more agile. The consolidation makes us more agile and responsive in collaborating with the former contractors, given our large amount of CAPEX plan. We need quite flexible and responsive collaboration and prompt resource allocation and reallocation from site to site pertaining to this or that investment projects that we run. So this consolidation helps us better plan for our resources and capacities. As Oleg has mentioned in his introductory presentation, our geography of project is quite widespread, so depending on the project, its size, its location, its CAPEX amount earmarked, it may require some complex interactions with Gazprom. In 2020, for the first time, we migrated to a three-year cycle of investment program planning, and this gives us more opportunities in terms of midterm planning and resource allocation as we collaborate with the former contractors with Gazprom. Now, answering your question directly, if it would make sense to keep using them as contractors, well, it stands to note that we do work with Gazprom as a contractor. Companies that have been consolidated under the auspices of Gazprom are still there, and they are active participants of all our processes related to the implementation of our investment projects. If that answers your question, Oskar, you just mentioned the companies that got consolidated by Gazprom, are you ready to make this scope, this perimeter of the companies clearer? Can you mention the names? Andrei Fick. Well, talking about the scope, we mean Stroygaz Consulting, Stroygaz Montage, and STNG. So these are the companies in scope. Gazprom Automatizatsiya or Gazprom Automation. I mean, the larger companies would be it. Oleg Aksutin, sorry to interrupt here, let me step in. Also, there are subsidiaries apart from those larger companies. Talking about construction companies, we understand the consolidation phase is over to date. Now we have a single point of contact contractor which works based on clear, transparent, and end-to-end principles. We're working to deliver those principles now. Talking about the market is still there. Gazprom's construction projects do deploy other companies, other contractors external to Gazprom. Gazprom does bid at our tender, so there is an arm's length component. This hasn't gone anywhere. We do need this arm's length basis in order to measure specific metrics of efficiency and performance to maintain reliability and economic efficiency of the services we consume. also let me add a comment on this three-year planning cycle. Also, we have a five-year forecast period for our CAPEX plan, for our investment program, as we term it here at Gazprom, which helps us and which helps all the investment process stakeholders plan for their activities on a five-year horizon. And this does help because it helps us, it helps everyone to understand all the tasks, goals, and objectives beforehand and duly arrange one plan for construction processes and activities. Over to Andrei Thick. Does that answer your second question? Oscar, yes, thank you. Then your third question, the South Kirinskaya field. Well, South Kirinskaya is certainly on our CAPEX plan here at Gazprom today. We're active developing this project. This year we're going to continue drilling at the field, and this project is sort of a reference point for us. This is a full-scale demonstrator, so to speak, of our success in terms of import substitution. To date, we haven't considered the schedule of project implementation. We're well on track. We're on time running this project. Certainly, last year, the COVID-19 pandemic did take its toll on project implementation processes, but this is not exclusively about our Kirinskaya, obviously. So today I can say that we keep running the project and we are on track. Oscar, do you confirm the guidance of 2023? Andrei Fick, yeah, you've mentioned the year and I confirm it. Thank you very much. Thank you. Next question from Reuters, Oksana Kobzeva. Hello. You have sound issues. I'm sorry, we can't hear you. It's echoing the line. Can you hear me now? Yes, we can hear you. Yeah, hello. I have a few questions. You are still having trouble with the sound. Let's hand it over to another participant, Vitaly Sokolov, Energy Intelligent. Hello, can you hear me well? Hello, can you hear me well? Yes, we can hear you, Vitaly Sokolov, Energy Intelligence. Yeah, thank you. I have a couple of questions. I understand one of the questions is pretty similar to one of Oksana's questions. Now, Oleg has mentioned consensus forecast in his presentation as to natural gas demand in Europe and China. But you know, recently forecasts have recently been revised to the smaller side. Which alternative forecasts are you considering, and how is this related to your plans and targets in terms of gas production, gas exports? How are the relevant targets different from your initial targets and guidance? This is my first question. My second question about your green spending mentioning in excess of $500 billion in the coming 5 years that you mentioned at your Investor Day. How much will be invested in pipeline upgrades in Russia, and what else do you classify within the scope of green spending? And also about hydrogen. Earlier today, you've said that going forward, you're going to produce hydrogen without CO2 emissions. Do you mean hydrogen produced from natural gas with CO2 capturing technology, or do you mean water electrolysis as well? And also, a question about your European project. Are you going to take part in European projects to produce green hydrogen, for example, gas, but that you have related to take part in the Aqueductus project? Are you going to engage in that project? I go into obtain any expertise from the project, and that project I have mentioned. Is it a competitor to your pipeline delivery projects and to your blue hydrogen projects? And yet another question. Talking about modern gas transportation capacities, you mentioned 330 million cubic billion cubic meters per year. How is this increment going to be delivered? Through constructing pipelines to China? Do you consider any new pipelines bound for Europe? Nord Stream 2, is it going to be last pipeline to Europe? And does this number of 330 SCM include the Ukrainian transit? Thank you, Oleg Aksutin. Well, we've got enough questions for a dissertation here, for a doctoral thesis. Now, our long-term growth and development plan foresees at least three cases or developmental scenarios. Best case, base case, and worst case or minimal case, cases of the company development. Now, we are not confined within just the three scenarios, and in 2020 we came up with yet another scenario, an additional pessimistic case related to the COVID pandemic. We were fast enough to respond to the pandemic, and we came up with a relevant projection case, and we used that to revise our operations during the following 6 months. Variability of the company's operations depending on extrinsic factors, factored in our long-term growth and development plan. So our long-term growth and development plan is flexible and agile to duly respond to extrinsic factors. Now, what I mean by the minimum case, at the basis of our forecast projections and planned operations, we understand that we have some minimum contractual commitment for natural gas delivery. So our projections are not just hypothetical guesstimations. They are based on clear-cut logics, on specific contracts that are there on paper that require minimum natural gas delivery commitments to off-takers, and they also set forth off-take commitments on the part of the off-takers, so we never go below the level of those commitments. So we use this minimum level to understand the risks we may be exposed and we'll have to mitigate. Now, green spending. Indeed, this is on our agenda. A core portion of spending is related to the Russian gasification program, the development of gas infrastructure, gas distribution infrastructure, because this is directly related to transition from coal to gas in power generation, and this does contribute into a greener environment. So a larger part is gasification, as I have said. Then also we invest in upgrading natural gas pumping units to boost their performance, their efficiency, and to reduce the consumption of fuel gas, so to speak. This is also classified as green technologies. Now, talking about the project Gascade participates in, well, Gazprom is not going to produce green hydrogen. We're not going to produce hydrogen by the way of water electrolysis that you have mentioned. Gascade, however, is currently active studying the currently available technology and solutions in the market. This is rather a project to study the available opportunities and whatever is related to that. This company is free to do that. This is an operator. It works in a specific entry and specific regulatory conditions, so it maintains its operations in a normal way, whatever this is related to. Talking about gas transportation capacities, indeed, this is 330 BCM of natural gas to be transported a year, and this number embraces Europe and China. More than 60% is Europe. The rest of this increment is attributable to China. Now, what kind of pipelines? Again, let me emphasize that this is more than gas pipelines that we're currently constructing. We have not yet made any specific investment decisions to deliver new gas pipelines bound to Europe. This is just in a couple of words. I could talk about it more extensively, but this would be a doctoral thesis indeed. Oscar, so your new incremental transportation capacities are bound for China, not Europe. Oleg Aksutin, yes, this is the case as of today. Thank you. Next question comes from Oksana Kobzeva, Reuters. Can you hear me? Yes, we can. Thank you. Now, actually, you have answered one of my questions. Let me ask you a few follow-ups. First, projects of natural gas transportation to China. One of your projects mentioned previously was the Far Eastern pipeline. Now, currently, there is uncertainty with the expansion of the Sakhalin LNG plant because there is not enough gas for that. So, in this respect, what is going to happen to deliver natural gas to China? You have already mentioned South Kyrenskaya to come on stream in 2023. Does it mean the timelines correlate with the new pipeline? I mean, is there a correlation between the new pipeline and South Kyrenskaya, or is South Kyrenskaya going to be linked only to the extension of the Sakhalin 2 plant? My next question is about your plans in terms of LNG production expansion. You have already rescheduled a few times the construction of an LNG plant in the Leningrad region of Russia. What is the current status? What are you currently planning? Gazprom has said a few times that the Russian LNG competes with pipeline deliveries, but you mentioned LNG supplies by another producer. But given your LNG plans in the Leningrad region near Usluga, how are you going to constrain yourself in order not to allow for competition with your pipeline deliveries? The next question is about your strategy. I understand you do not have any specific hydrogen plans or strategies. When are you going to enter the relevant markets? Is it towards 2030 or towards 2050? I understand you do not have any current plans or targets in the hydrogen space, since this is just at its R&D stages you have mentioned. Do you understand it correctly? The next question is about low-carbon development scenarios. So you said you are considering a few low-carbon scenarios of development through 2050. The low-carbon scenario, under which conditions can it be implemented? I understand this is one of the few scenarios you consider, right? Because external conditions may develop differently. Oleg Aksutin, thanks for your question. Let me start with a final question of yours. Now, we are talking about a very serious piece of work that is at a very early stage of its development. I would be happy to make a final projection, but I'm afraid I will be not precise enough. Indeed, we do consider a few scenarios, including lowest carbon scenarios. So it would be too early to answer your question now in a particular way. It wouldn't be precise on my part if I try and answer this question now. So let's wait for this work to continue and be completed, because there are too many factors that may impact our conclusion. So let's not replace the R&D institute that is currently busy with the analysis. Now, your other question, natural gas in the Far East. We do not have any natural gas shortages for our projects. Talking about pipeline bound for China, we are currently negotiating, so I could hardly add anything here. I don't think it would make sense to contribute anything to that discussion at this point in time, given the sensitive, naturally sensitive nature of this information, right? Talking about the volume of gas for the implementation of other projects, there are no shortages. Now, LNG at Pertovia compressor station. Today, construction is underway. We are currently busy with commissioning of some systems. We're going to bring it on stream towards the year end. Well, how to manage competition that you have mentioned? The thing is that we have the only operator. This is Gazprom expert who is responsible for LNG exports and pipeline gas exports, and this is Gazprom expert's task to manage this competition, to avoid the competition. Also, we consider LNG as a way of, as a tool of diversification. We deliver LNG to locations where it makes no sense or where it is impossible to deliver pipelines to construct pipelines to. So this is only bound for specific markets. This, in our understanding, does address the issue of competition that you have mentioned. Did I miss anything? Oscar, yeah, could you please take us through the prospects of the third train of Sakhalin 2? Oleg Aksutin. Now, this project is subject to a consortium, not just Gazprom, and this consortium is responsible for this or that decision pursuant to the continuation of the project implementation. Currently, this matter is pending discussion and consideration by the participants of the consortium. No consortium, no final decision has been made yet. Oscar, and your hydrogen strategy, do you have any prospects, or could you please shed some more color on that? When are you going to enter the market, Oleg Aksutin? What markets? There is no hydrogen market yet. If you know where a hydrogen market is, please give us a hint. We would be really grateful. Oscar, now the German side is currently a strong advocate of this topic. They say they would be happy to engage in joint projects with Russia. Maybe this is the dimension where you handle this. Oleg Aksutin, thanks for that comment, by the way. We are running a few hydrogen-related projects with our partners in Germany, but these are pilots, R&D, so to speak, projects. In particular, to study hydrogen storage conditions, hydrogen transportation opportunities, and using pipelines. No clear-cut answers, no final answers have been obtained to date. Also, what we have discussed with our German partners is the production of hydrogen by conventional methods with CO2 subsequently disposed of. We did discuss it at the Business Forum. And however, to engage in this project, we've got to understand the underlying principles and the technologies, the solutions that are going to be used in order to implement it efficiently. For this project not to be a pilot, but for it to become something that makes economic and technological sense. We can't see we can't see any project that will for sure fly well. Neither our German partners do, because this is too early to say. Now, an example, some regulatory matters and issues. Now, this is not a joke. There is no global hydrogen market as yet. There is hydrogen and there is methane hydrogen. Methane hydrogen mixes are good because if you add some 20% of that mix, we reduce CO2 emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, of 15 to 30%. This is a great number, right? And this is why it has become relevant. But in some European countries, the law only allows to add not 0.02% or up to 10% of hydrogen to natural gas. So this is a uniform. This is not a uniform regulatory system. Okay, we produce a lot of hydrogen and pump it into the pipeline. And what's next? What's next? Certainly, we would love it to grow and develop quickly and dynamically. But this good things take time. This is just the case with how we worked to establish the gas transportation system, the multi-component gas framework. And this is a long journey, and we will have to walk this long walk. We will have to make this long journey in the hydrogen space. Hydrogen is highly volatile, and this is a technical, this is a purely scientific thing. And its penetration capability is higher than that of methane. So we have got to understand how shut-off valves used for methane will sustain hydrogen. If the capabilities are not enough, we will need new sealant materials. So, you know, this requires insulation, reliability, excessive volatility management. These are areas that require scientific research. Hydrogen is a great product. This is a green product. But to be able to leverage its strengths and properties, we will have to do some big homework. This is the case. Oscar, okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Next question comes from Fontanka, Denis Lebedev. Hello, Mr. Rixutin. I have two questions. Let me ask them one by one. Now, first, could you please take us through the progress of your Ust-Luga project? Can you give us the final cost of the project and its breakdown? And also, this about the same subject, the funding sources mentioned were different and very interesting, in particular what VEB offered, like People's Investments, then National Wealth Fund, and other sources. Are you clear about the funding sources where you're going to get money for this project from? Thank you very much. But I think these are rather questions for Vitaly Merkalov. And you will be able to ask these questions next week, on Thursday, at a relevant press conference. Oscar, okay. Thank you. Then I have another question. 2 years ago, you suggested revising your corporate spending department at Gazprom. Quite a lot of time has passed. Has the process of management of corporate spending moved anywhere? Can you see any ways to minimize, to streamline corporate spending, Oleg Aksutin? Thank you for your question. Indeed, we have seen some change in transforming this business process. I think we've got to talk about the result, not the process, how we did it. Now, all of our procedural matters related to procurement, in these terms, we reduced the number of procurement process participants, stakeholders. Also, we migrated to a 3-year procurement cycle in terms of materials and services. The procurement that we ran for the pipe that was discussed extensively last year with our pipe industry colleagues, and they said, you know, guys, you've done a great job because you sourced a pipe at a price that is 50% lower than it would be possible otherwise. You know, so this approach has proven effective and efficient, and this is a fixed price which is frozen for 3 years. So this new approach helped us optimize procurement timelines, getting direct pricing from vendors. Also, we focused a lot on digitalization. Indeed, we do focus a lot on digitalization in our investment operations, in our procurement processes, in our certification and accreditation efforts. We strive to make this our procurement process as transparent as possible. Everyone could read it on our website, what it takes to become our vendor. One can freely apply for becoming our vendor and then trace the whole journey before becoming a vendor of services or products of Gazprom. Another thing that we're busy with in terms of streamlining costs, this is the analysis of the change that we see as part of project and program implementation. We have a relevant directorate within the department Andrei Fick is head of, and this is responsible for the monitoring and control of changes that take place as we implement our investment program to bring economic effect. Also, we have another relevant department that is responsible not just for technical analysis, but also for analyzing this or that equipment item or this or that solution in terms of the economic sense it makes, in terms of its economic feasibility. So we develop in these directions, just briefly. How do you measure the outcome of the optimization? Could you please say it again? Any numbers in terms of the impact of the optimization? How much have you been able to save, so to speak, on the back of those efforts? I mean, could you estimate the performance, the efficiency of this work that you have undertaken, Oleg Aksutin? Well, it's a multi-dimensional thing. I wouldn't give you a number off the top of my head because I just don't want to mislead you, Oscar. And just a follow-up here. Now, as a resident of St. Petersburg, I think that Gazprom could seemingly pay attention to quite a few or some other its projects that can be streamlined, that could be streamlined in terms of procurement. Are there any other projects that are current candidates for procurement optimization? Oleg Aksutin, let me give you an answer in a different dimension, how to streamline it. We are currently active using the intergroup synergies that we unlock by way of implementing our projects. There are risk responsibility agreements, risk sharing agreements that we enter into together with Gazprom Neft. For example, the Bavanenkovo field and the Karasavaya field. There are the classical Cenomanian gas deposits. Also, there are Nakamian and Jurassic deposits where we have quite a lot of liquid hydrocarbons. And in that case, when we have gas and liquid hydrocarbons, we do shared projects through investment programs of Gazprom Neft. So we take out the gaseous gas, the gaseous substance, natural gas and Gazprom Neft takes liquid hydrocarbons. So we do obtain economic effect from that, but this does not affect the investment program of Gazprom, because this is on Gazprom Neft's CAPEX plan. And talking about optimization and streamlining, this is our continuous priority. We have our internal standard. This is our internal rate of return to be delivered by any project. So this is a firm requirement. We have specific internal rate of return requirements and targets within Gazprom internally. So our first and most important reference is this. And we use it to measure any change on the margins of the project to deliver top-notch shareholder returns and margins. You asked us about particular projects. Well, we analyze each and every project that we have under our belt that we consider, and each and every project is subject to this thorough economic and technical analysis, and we do scrutinize them down to the tiniest detail to understand the breakdown and composition of costs and expenses. Like as part of joint ventures, we also do unlock synergies. Talking about Gazprom, we have it as a single point of contact contractor now. And this also unlocks considerable synergies, because the processes and practices are end-to-end. Decision-making is centralized, clear and transparent, and this is precisely fit into the scope of CAPEX that we have earmarked. Is your department going to move to St. Petersburg? Could you please say it again? Is your department going to move to St. Petersburg? We did it some 4 years ago. We have moved to St. Petersburg long ago. Dennis, thanks a lot for your questions. Thank you. Colleagues, it's been more than an hour that we have been working. Let's give the floor to the two remaining participants that haven't yet asked their questions. Please, one or two questions each. First, J.P. Morgan and Galina Glazova. Hello. Thanks for an opportunity to ask my question. I have just a single question. Could you please briefly update us on your Ust-Luga project? You have mentioned this in your introductory presentation earlier today when you're going to bring it on stream, which is the CAPEX amount, and what is the current progress status in construction of this project? Thank you very much. Ust-Luga. Okay. Well, as I have already said, this would make sense to ask this question to Vitaly Merkelov next week at the relevant press conference on Thursday of the next coming week. Thank you, Transmedia. Gurieva Anastasia, please go ahead. Anastasia, your question, please. Yeah, hello. I have a question about in your midterm investment. At which level is Gazprom planning for investments in 2022, 23, and 24? I mean, CAPEX. What is your CAPEX guidance? How much will go to midstream, to upstream? How much will go to eastern projects and unified gas supply system? This is my first group of questions. The second group of questions, if I may. Yes, please, please go ahead. Thank you. And my second group of questions, if I may, is the following. For quite a long time, Gazprom has been delivering peak production at some 1.5 cubic meters. And I understand in the underground gas storage facilities allowed some 800 MCM per day. Are you going to sustain this level, or your peak daily production will be going down, and peak levels of underground gas storage facilities offtake will be moving up? How will these two metrics and components be correlating with each other? Again, the second group of your questions is rather for Vitaly Merkalov next week. And the first group of questions is for Oleg Yevgenievich or Andrei Thik. Thank you. Yeah, let's abstain from discussing upstream now for our colleagues to be able to discuss it extensively next week, talking about midterm planning. I have mentioned it already earlier today that in 2020 we first compiled our investment program for a three-year cycle with a projection cycle of 5 years to go. So against this backdrop, we are going to keep focusing on CAPEX. In the spheres of upstream and midstream, the level is pretty much the same as this year. So the total will be around 900 billion rubles per year, certainly approving an annual CAPEX plan during this or that year. This number may be changed a bit. I don't think it will change dramatically, but there can be changes. Because this is related to market situation and opportunities to get some additional income, one of your colleagues had asked about. Talking about the split between upstream and midstream, we're going to maintain the balance between upstream CAPEX, like 35% to 40% of our CAPEX plan total, and midstream will make some 40% to 45% of the CAPEX plan total. The remaining 10% will be downstream, and another 10% is other projects of Gazprom PJSC. As to the geography, then in the near to midterm, some 60% of our CAPEX will be attributable to the eastern regions of our country. This is Yakutian and Irkutsk natural gas production hubs and Sakhalin. Does that answer your question? Yes, thank you. Colleagues, thank you very much. Next press conference will take place this coming Thursday, and we will discuss export operations of Gazprom. Thank you very much. Thank you.